All right, we are back.
Now, sometime back on the program, not very long ago, we talked about the American Film Institute's list of top 100 American comedies, and we went on what we thought was a better list than the one they came up with. We realized at that time that we probably were leaving out a lot of movies that maybe aren't classics, maybe are not the funniest movies ever, but are probably worth mentioning. So joining me here once again is Tony Held and Whitney Lehman to go through some movies we think you know, may want to rent sometime and take a look at. Where did we leave off last time? I don't remember where we were exactly in terms of throwing out a bunch of them, so I guess we can just rear back and fling a few out there.
Well, I think a trend here is the AFI, I think, unduly threw in some movies that were just too modern and too, you know, we saw them a couple of years ago. Those were really funny. We'll put those in the timeless classics.
Right.
And I think our approach was definitely we wanted to go from the past up, and we stopped short of anything within about 10 years or so, just because some of those weren't thought as heady. So my kibitzing or throwing in of movies that just may not be timeless, but I definitely just soiled myself. I laughed so hard. It was the first time I saw Austin Powers. I know it's now been, you know, like sequeled and resequeled, and, you know, I usually don't like sequels all that much. But the first movie was genuinely funny. You know, I walked in there unawares, and I laughed my brains out, you know. The same with The Naked Gun, Leslie Nielsen from
Airplane.
Didn't
see Austin Powers, and didn't see The Naked Gun.
Well,
however... However, the unheralded gem of The Naked Gun was the original Police Squad TV series of Zuckerman and Abrams, brothers and Abrams, put together. They did six pilots, which the network did not pick up, which I thought were just screamers, every one of them.
And those constituted a large fraction of the first two Naked Gun movies.
They
as
just
well.
Recycled the material.
They took a lot of the odds and ends from those. For instance, there was one scene where Frank Drebin, Leslie Nielsen, plays a locksmith who's trying to root out organized crime, and he breaks into somebody's house, and they say, "Who are you? How did you get in here?" And his response was, "I'm the locksmith, and I'm the locksmith." It's just topically quite funny. Evidently not a belly laugh for all, though.
Yeah, sometimes the cinema humor does not translate into radio.
Well, there you go.
Whitney, did you agree with that?
I like the Naked Gun movie. I haven't seen the Police Squad movie, so I don't know. But Leslie Nielsen and Priscilla Presley, I thought were great in the Naked Gun series.
There's just a scene in the Police Squad where they kept having a character come in who was out of frame. He was like about 7 feet two, so you never saw his head. So he would enter in, and the top of the frame would hit him at about, you know,
chest level.
Yeah, right. And you have some food in your mouth, and he would brush his mouth, and a whole banana would fall from the side of his mouth.
Or he would come in and say,
"A large person.
I'm sorry, Bob, that's not regulation headgear." And he would go, "Okay." He would reach up, and all of a sudden appearing in the frame would be a sombrero.
Well, and protein shakes, Priscilla Presley, and it was Naked Gun 33 and a half, I think. She said, "I'm going to make a protein shake," and threw in sausage and salami, a stick of salami, and a lot of other odd ingredients.
You're not quite your Jamba Juice solution right there.
No. But,
some other totally recent notable, you know, mention would have to be South Park. I mean, that movie was really funny.
God.
It was a great musical. The songs were funny. It worked in. It was a masterpiece of entwining a lot of children with potty humor with no graphics. It was funny. I mean,
I thought it was painful, personally.
Yeah, I think the TV show is painful, and you'd have to basically put a gun to my head to make me see that movie in a theater. But, you know, but I know some people like it.
Well, there you go.
Let's go back. Let's go back to the guy that figured prominently on the American Film Institute list, who actually, in my opinion, is the greatest movie comedian ever. Hands down, not even close. There's not even a close second place. That would be Charlie Chaplin. But, unfortunately, by the time Chaplin got around to making feature-length movies in the 20s and 30s, I think he'd done his best stuff already. So the movies like Modern Times, City Lights,
Gold
The
Rush
Circus, The Gold Rush,
yeah,
they're all good, but I think that his brilliance shows through in some of the shorts, like he did. There's one called The Chaplin Review, which you can rent in your video store, where he took three of his favorites from like about the 1910s and redubbed them with his own musical score, and I think they're all wonderful.
Well, so what was the chaplain where he had the orphan child who...
The champ. No, the, not the, sorry, not the champ. The kid.
The kid.
The kid.
Yeah. The kid, and I mean, that was just timeless. I wouldn't exactly put that as a comedy. It was a kind of a heart jerker.
The scene where Chaplin takes off over the rooftops, I just can't, I mean, I don't think it's been equaled since.
Yeah.
I mean, and, this guy's just going roof to roof across a development, and I think he did his own effects. I mean, his own stunt work. It was just amazing.
And Modern Times, isn't that where he's being drugged through the gears of like some sort of
considered a classic
all the
way scene? I thought it was sort of silly.
Okay, well, Robert Osborne would probably disagree with you on that one.
And also, sadly, have to side with the fact that Laurel and Hardy did make the American Film Institute list with Sons of the Desert, which is their favorite feature length film. But again, the great Laurel and Hardy's things like The Music Box. It's only 20 minutes long, but the classic where they're trying to move a piano up into a building, if you've ever seen that.
Yeah, yeah.
God dang, that's funny.
Mm-hmm. So I would have to throw in, so you're still setting the way, way back machine.
No,
in
terms of classics.
Anywhere you want to go.
I have an addition for classics, Dinner at 8. That was great. Gene Harlem, Ray Dressler, Lionel Barrymore. It was excellent. I think it was about 1935. I think it is, actually.
Wow.
It deserves to be higher, though.
Okay. Don't know that one.
Very funny.
What is it again?
Dinner at 8.
Dinner at 8. Okay, that's on my list.
It was remade, actually, kind of recently, maybe by Showtime or HBO, but the classic is the funnier version of that movie.
So what's the general premise of Dinner at 8?
A socialite has a dinner party, and dinner starts at 8 p.m., and it just basically involves the characters who are coming to dinner and the whole dinner as it unfolds, and there's a lot of subplots going on.
So
rather amusing, though.
Is it kind of like a lavish, you know, 30s deco thing, or is it more like a Peyton's Place sort of catty sort of deal?
No, neither one. It's not a... It focuses more on the characters than the lavish sets of the 30s where the theme was escapism. It's definitely comedy. Hmm. It's not a Fred and Ginger escape the depression sort of a movie. It was...
Let's go back in time and work our way forwards. That might be as good a method as any. One that I love, which did make the AFI list fairly high on the list, was The General, Buster Keaton.
Never saw a lot of Buster Keaton movies.
Supposedly based on a real event of somebody grabbing a locomotive, and Buster Keaton plays this, I think, Southern general who winds up commandeering a locomotive, and there's this one scene, it was the most expensive scene in the movie ever at the time, where they drive the locomotive over a bridge and the bridge collapses. It's amazing. But this guy's timing, he would shoot these things and do his own stunts that just required like split second timing. You get your head crushed, and he would do these things. It's amazing stuff.
Life was a little cheaper back then in the United States, and now the liability associated with those stunts cost more than
maybe
the entire movie produced.
Maybe not, but no, I mean, sometime if you get a chance, The General.
Well, going back way back to the year of 1993, old time's sake, would be Groundhog Day. And that's a movie about a day that keeps repeating itself. And there's a movie that you can watch just loop over itself many, many times.
It has elements of a Greek tragedy because he knows every day that he will wake up and face the same day over again. It's not that he wakes up with amnesia and doesn't remember anything. He has full memory of the day before, and that's the tragedy of the whole
situation. Well, it's the tragedy
and comedy.
He's
caught in a time warp.
It's the comedy of Sisyphus, basically, because he relives the same day, and at some point he becomes frustrated and just tries to kill himself in every way imaginable, which, of course, is quite funny. And
the listeners at this point, they must know they're listening to KDVS 90.3 when we're comparing Groundhog Day to the myth of Sisyphus.
Well, it's a
because he has full knowledge. He has full knowledge of his tragedy.
Let's face it,
of
Tom Sullivan over at KFBK is not making these comparisons.
Yeah, well, neither is probably Howard Stern right now either. But it was a fantastic movie, and anytime you let Bill Murray just take off, you know. And I actually even like the movie Scrooged, which would be one of the better Christmas comedies out there.
Well, I didn't see it. Got mixed reviews, but I think we're on firmer ground if we cite Bill Murray's work in Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters, hilarious. I think did Ramis direct that one?
I think so. Yeah. At least Ghostbusters 2. I don't know if he did one.
Ira Reitman, I think, directed it, and I think Harold Ramis was the writer.
Oh, okay. Maybe that was it. Oh, okay. And yeah, and they were a team.
He sort of gets shunted aside playing the
almost setup man.
Egon.
Yeah. Egon.
Yeah, that's right.
Egon.
So, and they were also together in Stripes,
Connects
which was
fungus,
another funny movie.
Smuts and Molds.
Yeah, they were a great team together. So also you have to throw out, which is a little more touching, and this is going back to the year 1950, would be Harvey with Jimmy Stewart, which was an excellent movie, a little more touching than it was funny at points.
Cute movie, but, you know, is there really a good belly laugh in the whole movie?
It's just one of those that no matter what category you rank it on, any movie that you walk out wanting to be a better person and smiling, you know, that you have to give it some sort of honorable mention as being funny in some sense.
Interesting theory.
These are not shared by the University of Davis.
Yeah. Let's talk about movies. You know, well, before we do that, talk about movies you hate is always a lot of fun. Movies that you think really shouldn't be on the list, throw them off the damn list. And I would put Fargo first on my list. But before we go there, let's mention a quirky movie from the 80s that maybe a lot of kids listening haven't seen, Repo Man. That is bizarre, but just so enjoyable.
That was sort of a standard of like early 80s high school. You know, the Repo Man was sort of a cult following. I think it actually predates The Breakfast Club in terms of being one of those identifying movies.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High era.
Correct.
Yeah. Also a movie that's got a few good chuckles.
But before we break into the movies that we totally dislike, I'm going to have to throw out something that's not on the American Film Institute Top 100, which would have to be Frankenhooker, which doesn't get a lot of airtime.
That's more schlock, really. It's B-movie.
It's one of those Roger Corman B-flicks.
It is, absolutely. Bill Murray's one of his top 10 movies of, I don't know when it was done, 1994 or 3 or something, maybe even 2, but... amusing. It was B-movie horror that was funny as well.
Yeah, it's got...
Super Crack enters the picture.
That's right.
Hookers. A man who's an inventor and kicked out of medical school many times composes a sweetheart out of dead hookers.
Yeah, that's right. His sweetheart was unfortunately...
maimed in a lawnmower accident and... he decides to rebuild her from dead hooker parts.
That's right, but...
In order to do so,
he needs to invent Super Crack, which is the mechanism by which he gives her life.
He has to entice the prostitutes into donating body parts.
That's right.
Unwillingly.
So, it's not a timeless classic, and it's not for all, but if you're into B-grade movies, it's about as funny as it gets.
All right, a movie that I hated, Fargo. Made the list somewhere in the 90s. I just don't like the Coen brothers.
I don't like some of the Coen brothers movies, but I thought that one was well done. Except for Frances McDormand. How did she get Best Supporting Actress or Best Actress nomination? She fell in and out of accent quite a bit, I thought. But other than that, I thought it was an interesting movie and well acted.
Gone off the web, hot tip. The movie was not based on a true story. Coen brothers made that up.
Well, to say something's based on a true
story, on a web.
You know, you could just basically say that there's a couple of bipeds, and then that constitutes based
it
on a true story.
Human beings,
yeah, that's
so
right. Yeah. So there's considerable artistic liberty.
I really got the fact that the Coen brothers think the people from Minnesota are kind of square. You know, I mean, I got that in about the first 4 seconds.
But aren't they?
Do I need 2 hours of it? I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, Doug, maybe you're from the MTV generation and you think that 4 minutes should constitute the entire plot. But those of us who can sustain for 90 minutes.
No, I don't know. There's something about those guys. They're very mean-spirited in a way that somehow doesn't sit well with me. I mean, I just knew when they introduced this guy's goofy, ditzy Minnesota housewife wife, they're going to kill her later for comedy effect, which they do. I don't know. Shooting people in the head for comedy effect is not a good thing in my book.
But you agree some violence is funny. Some of the movies that you've picked
if
in the top
done,
10.
Yeah, if it's done right, but I don't
know.
No,
it's all personal preference, I think.
Well, I guess. Te gustibus non est disputandum, I guess, when you get right down to it. But
if we don't say that 10 times a day. Here's something. that I would throw out in the top 100 would be Mrs. Doubtfire.
You throw it out? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Painful, yeah.
Maybe that's more universal than some of the things picking in terms
of how many cold shoot drop.
Yeah, how many VHSs it sold, but it definitely does not deserve to be above Caddyshack.
No. The one thing we should probably close with is that sometimes a movie is so bad, is so unintentionally horrible that it's a comedy. And I think that...
The movies of John Waters is a classic example.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of the fact that when they did originally the 50 Worst Films of All Time, a very funny book, one of the funniest books I've seen, they asked people at the end of it to write in their selections of bad movies. Astonishingly, the book was in like late 70s or so. They compiled in the early 80s the list of all these bad movies, and almost all of them were films that had been out in the last 2 or 3 years, with one exception. The film that actually got more votes than any others was a 1959 low-budget sci-fi film called Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Oh, that's Ed Wood, yeah.
And it's like, it's worth renting Plan 9 if you've never seen it, just because the unintentional comedy is considerable.
Oh, that's astounding. That was the basis of the whole Mystery Science Theater 3000 off Comedy Central, is they would just overdub those tremendously bad sci-fi movies. But
One's as bad as they come. Bela Lugosi, they filmed about 5 minutes of him or so, died during the production of the movie. Ed Wood then hires a guy who's a foot taller, who happens to be his chiropractor, I think it was, to put the cape in front of his face and imitate Lugosi in the remaining scenes that had to be filmed, and doesn't pull it off. All right, well, this was fun again. So, Tony and Whitney, thanks for coming, and in the future maybe we can do even more movie fun stuff. Bad films sometime.
Thanks That'd for having great. Us.
All right.
We can also throw in dramas at some point as well.
All right, well, we hope you enjoyed that show, because unfortunately, once again, we are out of time. We'll see you again next Thursday at 5 o'clock right here on 90.3 FM on your dial. Next week, we plan to tell you about a little event we attended in San Francisco on the 7th of September to mark another anniversary. This was the 75th anniversary of the first television broadcast, and we will tell you next week the remarkable story about the unheralded inventor of television, Philo T. Farnsworth. So do tune in. We think you'll find it very interesting.